Hello, everyone, and welcome to War of the Stars, a Star Wars podcast. Come to you, as always, from deep within the Outer Rim, far beyond the watchful eyes of the Galactic Empire. My name is John Mark Talley, and joining me, as always, is my co-host,
Garrett K. Jones.
Garrett K. Jones, and this is the first episode of, I wouldn't say season eight, year eight. I could say season eight. Eighth year of War of the Stars. Thank everyone who watched our anniversary show with Brian Miller. That was a lot of fun. We're here today to talk about the season finale of The Bad Batch. And I will go off. I'll say right now, this was not the perfect episode of Star Wars. This is not even the perfect episode of The Bad Batch, but this was the perfect send-off for this series.
Yes.
I think, like, there have been better episodes of Clone Wars and stuff like that, but and this was really a good send-off for that whole era.
I think so, too.
This felt like, more so than even the final season of Clone Wars, this felt like a good send-off for the Clone Wars, that era of Star Wars.
Yeah.
Like, it felt like there was a good bookend.
Yeah, there was this was a really strong episode, probably the strongest we've seen in the last couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. Just because there was so much packed into it. And I'm really glad that it wasn't just like a 25-minute episode. Like, yes, they doubled the time. It was 50 minutes from start to finish.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes the end credits with all the different, you know, vocal casts and all that. And I was really enthusiastic about it. I watched part of it at work during my lunch break last week, and then I watched the other half after I got home, and it was it was high energy from start to finish.
It was. I mean, like you said, it was 15 minutes, but it felt like nonstop. Like, you were just, for the minute you hit the ground, you're just boom, 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 boom. You're in it, and it takes you on a roller coaster ride. You know, and there were just so many good callbacks from earlier, you know, episodes. And I don't know. The first thing I want to talk about is just the brutality of this episode. Like, this was a brutal episode. And one thing I noticed is, like, even when you see them, you know, getting shot with the blasters, you see the blaster bolt. You see the blaster shots hit them. You see the holes. It's not like they've done before where they just get knocked down and you don't really see it. You know, you see them get shot and the effects of that.
Well, and I think part of that has to do with how standards have changed with regards to animation, because while this is technically made for kids, the fun thing about that is, like, because it's on a streaming platform instead of like network television, there are certain things that the animators can do where they don't have to pull the punches. Like, you go back to the, you know, days of the 70s, 80s, and even into the early 90s, you could not have red ink anywhere on a character's face unless you could identify it as makeup or paint.
Mm-hmm.
Because it would look like blood, and so they couldn't do that. They can do stuff like that now, especially in streaming platforms, because the whatever sensors are going into it, they don't have control over what an animation studio puts on their own platform.
Yeah.
So that's been kind of cool. They didn't have to pull any punches like that, like they did with Cartoon Network.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's just start. I mean, right away, it starts out right. By the way, the name of the episode is The Cavalry Has Arrived. And right from the beginning, you know, it picks up right where the last episode left off. I mean, you know, they with the batch going through the jungle, you know, going to Mount Tantus and Wrecker's been injured.
Yeah. And, so we've got them trying to get into the facility, and we've got Omega and the kids in the vault trying to get out of the facility.
Yeah.
So you've got two different plans that were happening.
I loved Omega's plan, releasing the Zello Beast.
Yeah.
That was great.
I would have liked to have seen a little bit more with the Zello Beast.
Those poor stormtroopers.
Oh God, they didn't. What's that? They had. You know, I would have liked to have seen more with the Zello Beast. I think having it, because all it does is it tears out of there pretty quickly, and most of the action you hear about over comms or because someone else is talking about it, you don't get to see it nearly as much. But the thing I liked about it is that it created the right amount of chaos, the right diversion for things to play out the way they did.
Yeah.
And you could really see...
and the fact...
What was that?
The fact that... Oh, sorry. The fact that... I almost said tech. Echo makes the comment of that's exactly what he would have done.
Yeah.
For the distraction. And it gave them an entrance.
Yes, it did. And you know, the thing I liked about it is that the it really showed that there was kind of a Jurassic Park moment with this whole thing. Like, all this time Hemlock has been trying to be as in control as he possibly can. He is trying to just mitigate every single circumstance that he thinks he's in control of, and at the end of it, he's not in control. Control was the illusion.
Yes. To quote the great Dr. Malcolm.
Yes. And so I thought it was, the episode was well paced. And I mean, yeah, it was just so well done. I mean, we talked about last week with Brian about how Omega is one of those characters, like, she doesn't feel like a Mary Sue type character because you see her
development. Everything that she did, like, they never put her in a situation where if she gets out of the situation, you're like, how is she able to do? Like, you never feel like it's unrealistic, the situations that she's in.
Right.
You're always like, oh yeah, that makes sense. She was probably trained to do that. And first of all, let's talk about the the X clones, if that's what you want to call them. The special forces. The fact that end they turned out to be just clones.
Yeah.
That there was no, how did you feel about that? The fact that I think it makes it even more scary, like the Empire, that more scary, that like it wasn't some special, you know, anything like that. These were just normal clones that had been so tortured and brainwashed so much that they'd turned into these basically almost mindless drones.
Yeah.
I was watching the breakdown from Screen Crush, and he made the point that they were almost like these were the mirror image of the Bad Batch.
Yeah,
you have these clones that were genetically, you know, enhanced, but still had their individuality that gave them special abilities. But then on the opposite end, you have almost the mirror image, or almost the ultimate end of that, where it's like these were clones that were specially modified but have almost no free will and
no personality,
no, and are completely obedient to
I thought it was good. Like, it felt like it would have been nice to have that closure, to have something a little bit more I don't know, bizarre or out there, because, you know, clone of a clone would be would have been cool plot point, especially when we kept flagging this idea that Crosshair wasn't making it out alive.
Yes.
But
which they teased that. They teased that because he makes the, when they're getting ready to go into the facility, he says, there's no way you guys can get in. I can get in. And even he even mentions, was Operation Plan 99.
Oh, yeah.
What's that?
Plan 99, which is like,
we'll sacrifice.
We'll
sacrifice himself. Yeah, which is what Tex said. And they both immediately, well, at least Hunter says, no, we go in, you know, Omega needs us all. We go in as a group.
And I thought that was, I thought that was really well done. On the one hand, I'm glad that none of the other the main characters died, which is great, because it does give you a little bit of a happy ending. But
yeah, I know that's what a lot of people online have been saying, is like, finally a happy ending to a Star Wars show.
Yeah. But it especially coming out of the Clone Wars era, it does feel like nothing felt cheated.
Exactly. The only, if there was to make any nitpick thing that I would say, it was just a nitpick thing, I would have liked to have seen one of the kids use the Force a little bit. I'm not talking about throwing a rock or something, but something like where they're going down a corridor and one of them says, wait a minute, someone's coming. I can feel someone's coming, and they go the opposite way. Just something like that, because they teased and teased that these kids have Force sensitivity.
Well, and even the little baby had used the Force completely.
Yeah, like, and you see them using the blocks and stuff like that. Just something, a little hint. Like I said, I don't want them to be, you know, lifting rocks or throwing doors at people, but just something as simple as sensing that someone's coming, and then they have to go they go the opposite way because one of them senses that there's trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen stuff. Like, other than that, I don't really have that much to complain about this episode.
This was, like I said, it's a solid episode. It was well written, well directed. Mm-hmm. The pacing was great. The editing was amazing. And it had some really solid emotional payoff. I mean, for the last season or the last two seasons, Hemlock has been a huge thorn in everybody's side, and to see him get his comeuppance the way he did was amazing, because it provided redemption for Crosshair. It provided catharsis for the audience, and it was just well executed.
Yeah. Talk about a well executed though death of a villain. Rampart getting blown up.
Oh my God. I love
that.
Yes.
Like, he has that look of like that look where you just like he doesn't say anything. He's just like, he knows he's dead. He's like,
yeah.
Well,
he was so, he felt so smug and so superior. Like, he was going to get a one up on Hemlock. He was going to be the one to provide.
Yes.
Like, he should have seen that coming.
Yeah. And I mean, first of all, just when you first see him in prison, you realize that he's right across, his cell is right across from Nalase.
Yeah.
You know, you have that rivalry right there, the person, Nalase looking at the person who destroyed her homeworld.
Yeah.
And then she's the one that,
Talk about well done writing, good emotional payoff, and good catharsis.
Oh, yes. Crosshair losing his hand. That was
brutal. Especially his trigger hand.
Yes. I mean, you don't see it, but still, it's just like, oh. And there's that moment when the blade's about to go down, and it cuts to somewhere else.
Yeah.
And for a few minutes, you're like, well, maybe he got out of it. Maybe something happened. Maybe he, you know, they'll go, they'll do it. And then you see him lying there and you see he doesn't have a hand. You're just like, oh.
Oh, and well, and then with Echo duking it out with the other clones, you know, he's leading that that battalion of escapee clones, and they go into that chamber and it turns into a trap. And oh yes. My gosh, that was intense.
That was so and that was the first time where you're definitely like, oh, like when you see that blade go through the back of that clone trooper, you're just like, oh, they're not playing around this episode.
No, they weren't. It was pretty brutal. Because usually when someone gets impaled, especially like on Clone Wars, most of the time it's people getting impaled on a lightsaber. And so you'd see the up close of the people's faces as the impaling happens, and then it cuts to, and then they disengage the lightsaber. This was far different, and it was nice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was good to see that out.
I mean, I loved the one thing I liked was the fact that at the end, that it was Crosshair that Omega went to first.
Yeah.
That was, I mean, I'll admit I got a little emotional.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say I fully teared up, but that was kind of an emotional scene right there, you know, considering the last two seasons have been really pushing Crosshair's arc.
Yes.
I'd say for the most part, this has been a Crosshair story. This has been a Crosshair redemption story.
I would agree with that, because especially with how things played out with him in season one, where he bailed on his team to join up with the Empire because, you know, he was a good soldier, he follows orders. But then the whole season has been a great character arc for him. You also see some great character arcs in the rest of the team. Like, Tech was that character who always tried to play it safe, and when it came right down to it, he had to make the tough call where he enacted a variation of Plan 99 that took him out of the equation.
Yeah.
And he did the riskiest thing he possibly could in order to save his team. With Wrecker, you get this maturity growth in him. I mean, he's essentially like a big kid, and he goes from being a big kid to and being kind of the numbskull to, you know, being the one to say, hey, we can't do this. We can't just go jumping in guns blazing. We need to think things through.
Yeah. Yeah. And he also is the one, he overcomes his fear.
Yeah.
His fear of heights.
He does.
Which, that's still one of my favorite lines. Like, I'm not afraid of heights. It's just when I get up, what's the line, when I get in high places, gravity. So I can't remember what the line is, but
yeah,
I have a problem with gravity.
Yeah. I think everybody has a problem with gravity. but even Hunter has this great character arc, because like, he was the one who really was reluctant to have Omega even join the team. He knew it had to be done, but he was really reluctant. And at the end of the series, when we have that fast forward to, you know, a few years later, and she's wanting to join up with the rebellion, he's the one who's reluctant to let her go.
Yes.
He's been the father figure for her the entire time. You know, she calls them brothers, but Hunter's been a father for her more than any other, you know, archetype. And now, you know, after all of his time spending protecting her and trying to rescue her and save her and doing everything he can, now it's at a point where he can't do anything. And she's going out to do something herself. And I think that's really well done.
Exactly. Do you think we'll see Omega again?
Hard to say.
There's I just saw this on my Facebook page, and I don't know if I can find it again, but there is a casting and skeleton crew that a lot of people are, a few people are maybe speculating that she, that her character could end up being Omega.
I'm pulling it up.
I lost it because she's got blonde hair and she looked like she'd be about the right. If skeleton, depending on when Skeleton Crew takes place, if it takes, is it post, is it during the rebellion or post rebellion? I can't remember.
Let me see here. It just says the information I'm pulling up on Wikipedia says the series follows four children who end up on an adventure to make their way home. After being lost in the galaxy following a discovery they make on their home planet. So it's really hard to say. I'm like, as far as what the setting is, I know we're getting it later this year.
Yeah.
I'm looking up the cast right now on IMDb. Let's see here. Skeleton Crew. Because we've got Jude Law, Carrie Condon, Ryan Kira Armstrong. There's two characters with like almost identical sounding names. There's Cass Bouget and then there's MJ Kang, and they're playing Mari and Gari respectively. The only character, and they're only going to be in it for three episodes. The only character that I'm seeing, or the only actor that I'm seeing that I think could potentially be.
Oh, here it is. It's a Carrie Condon.
Carrie Condon.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't get a name for her character. At least not on IMDb. She's a Irish.
I've seen a few people think Omega will make her live action debut in Skeleton Crew. They may be onto something, and then they show a picture of the older Omega. And then right next to it is a picture of Carrie Condon. I think they're mainly going over the fact that they both have blonde hair. They're both kind of this, similar build. They'd be about the right age, depending on when it's set.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to say.
Yeah, they definitely left her story open-ended.
They did. I just found this up. This is from Comic Book Resources. Skeleton Crew has been confirmed to be set in 9 ABY, so 9 years after the Battle of Yavin. Aligning its timeline closely with that of The Mandalorian. Entirely possible that we get a live action version of Omega, but I'm surprised that they would go with an Irish actress instead of a New Zealander.
New Zealand, yeah, that's true.
Given the fact that Omega had a heavy New Zealand accent,
the accent is a big part of her character.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's not an easy accent.
And that's not an easy accent to replicate either.
No, it's not. And while I don't think Condon is incapable, it would just make more sense to have someone who automatically has that accent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although to be fair, most people who are actors and actresses from outside of the United States, they actually say that the American accent is probably harder to do because it varies from region to region so drastically. Yeah. If you look at if you've ever seen the show The Boys, Anthony Starr, who plays Homelander, he's originally a Kiwi, and so hearing his American accent is great. Like, he does a great job, but then when you go and you hear his native accent, it's so mind-boggling that he's able to do it, because it's such a different pronunciation of so many things. Because, like, I mean, you know, you go anywhere in like Australia, New Zealand, or England, you know, they pronounce things like aluminium rather than aluminum. For us as Americans, we don't even give it a second thought. You know,
well, they'd say schedule,
right?
Instead of schedule,
right? Yeah,
there's different anyway.
And so, so working through those nuanced pronunciations can be awfully challenging, but you know, we'll see how it plays out, because you know, Skeleton Crew is not due out until like later this year, like this, closer to the fall, I think,
yeah. One of the things, and I mean, we were talking about a good bookend of moving from the Clone Wars period into the Rebellion was that scene with them right after they escape. And then you see, and the first time we see in canonical, kind of, you know, the whole, if you want to say canonical timeline, an Imperial Star Destroyer. Because before we've seen the Venator class, and now, or was it a Victory class? That might have been a Victory class or Imperial.
But still,
it was so cool just seeing it for the first time. And I've said this before. I love the way they're doing the bringing the ships in out of hyperspace when you see it, where it's just like boom, they're there.
Yeah,
like that is so cool. Just
I will say though the shot of seeing
those three ships and the Imperial Star Destroyer
My favorite shot of the entire show. At least this entire episode was the shot of Tantus, where you see the mountain, you see the concentric rings of the facility, and all of a sudden you see the Star Destroyer's prow just descend into the line of the camera. And I mean, obviously it's you know, just the way it's so well shot. The cinematography was amazing. Awesome. On that, and that's animation.
That was yes.
You don't think of cinematography, yes.
And then Tarkin, you know, just going in and just you see that more than anything, he's I don't say business person, but it's all about the funds, reallocating the funds from here to there, and then moving everything, and then taking everything, and just.
Well, the thing that struck me as interesting is this is really the first time you get a vibe of the kind of character that Moff Tarkin is. Like he wasn't just a military man; he was a comptroller. This guy, this guy's a number cruncher. And so, if the numbers don't add up, if they don't make sense, why keep funding a project that is going to be incredibly time consuming and resource wasting? And that's what was going on with Necromancer. I mean, obviously, Necromancer is going to have some payoff
in the death. But this also makes sense of why the Emperor would move it even further out of founding that shadow government that would become the First Order, and then moving everything with Project Necromancer out into the unknown regions.
Yeah,
you know, it's something in the background that, you know,
yeah,
this kind of helped. In a way, try to make sense of all that, of why the Emperor would do this, and you know why he would, after it failed, he would move it into, you know, because Palpatine always seems like he was the type of person that had a plan within a plan within a plan within a plan.
Yeah,
like, you know, But as we start to wrap up here, I mean, we kind of hit on overall thoughts on the series last week, but I mean, once again, just I think it's hard to, for me personally, when I'm trying to rank this with the other animated shows, because the Clone Wars was so. It was, you know, we had 7 seasons of the Clone Wars, and each season was like 22 episodes, I think, except for the final season.
Yeah.
You have a lot more episodes, and when you have a lot more episodes like that, you're able to get away with, you know, a few filler episodes. I definitely think it's better than Rebels.
Yeah, Rebels. I mean, I love Rebels. I liked Rebels well enough, but there came a point where it just felt a little, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I put it up there close to Clone Wars. And it feels like it's the same vein. Like, this Bad Batch feels almost like a continuation of Clone Wars.
Yes.
Like, it feels like a natural continuation of that series.
Yes, it definitely has it has definitely more of a natural connection, like almost like they're like Clone Wars is the big brother and Bad Batch is the little brother, with Rebels being like the
cousin,
the well-liked cousin.
Yeah.
And Resistance being the cousin that's just kind of out there.
Yeah, we're just like sure, he's related to us.
He's related, but very distantly. We're still all within the era that everybody loves.
Yeah. Where did it go from now here? I mean, I know we have Tales of the Empire, which I still have not seen the first episode yet.
I haven't yet. I'm gonna be watching that tonight. In fact, my challenge for you, since it's out and the episodes are so short, let's do this. Let's call it right here on the air. We'll do an overview of Tales of the Empire next week.
Okay.
And then
sounds good. We'll
pick out the episode we liked best individually and the episode we liked least.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, but where do you think they go now with Star Wars animation?
Here's the thing this is what I would like to see, ultimately. Obviously, Skeleton Crew is going to show a lot of that intra-trilogy content, you know, because it's gonna fill in some more of the gaps as far as what took place after the rebellion and before the resistance against the first order. Yeah. I would like to see more of that, because that's the stuff that we're missing right now. We had so much content coming out of the rebellion era, back in
the Clone Wars era too.
Yeah. And the Clone Wars era. But I mean, like before the prequel trilogy and the Clone Wars were ever a thing, we had so much content, whether it was video games or books or graphic novels or comics, depicting the rebellion era. There's a ton of stuff that can be pulled from. Regardless of whether or not it's canon, it's still out there. That we now have an opportunity now that the sequel trilogy has been established and they're trying to fill in those gaps, we now have an opportunity to fill in those gaps just a little bit more.
Yeah. What about stuff, more stuff for the High Republic era?
The High Republic era would be great. In fact, animation, especially with the way that the animation is looking now, how crisp and how clean it is, I would say instead of doing some live action film that's just going to take up resources, do an animated series on the High Republic. I mean, we've got a ton of books that have been made on that. I mean, stuff that's canon now, stuff that could have been considered canon prior to the Disney takeover. Like the Dawn of the Jedi series was a great set of books. And I think it would I think showing that would be great, because if I recall, the Acolyte is supposed to be set in that High Republic era about 100 years before.
Yeah. So like 100 years.
So, and we get to see that one next month.
Yeah. Well, excited about that.
I'm still a little
tentatively excited.
Oh,
tentatively excited.
Speaking of Acolyte, actually, there's a YouTube channel I watch called Mr. H Reviews, and there is an episode that I was watching from about a week or so ago where they were talking about new stuff coming out about the Acolyte, and how the showrunner was mentioning how Carrie Ann Moss's character was based off of Trinity from The Matrix, which is the character that Carrie Ann Moss got famous for playing.
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting is there was a video posted with the Korean guy who's in the show for May the 4th. And Mr. H Reviews was doing a list of, you know, like he was referencing some of the comments section because this particular video got ratioed pretty bad, substantially ratioed.
Really?
Well, one of the commenters that he references by name is StarWarsNews.net, which is Brian's channel. I immediately got on the horn. I sent Brian the link. I'm like, dude, I just heard it. Like, your name shows up in the comment section. I'm like, this is awesome.
Nice.
I don't know if Brian's been able to fully see the full video and he's been able to find it, but it's like a blink and you miss it type of thing. Like, I was in the process of playing something on my Xbox and I just heard it. And I'm like, oh, StarWarsNews.net. I know who that is.
Yeah.
Oh man. At least one guy is getting some positive references out of our little cadre of podcasters. That's awesome.
That's right. All right. Well, why don't you tell the people out there, find people out there where they can find you at?
All right. Well, you guys can find me on Instagram and X at GKJ_publishing. I've been posting some of the stuff that happened during Free Comic Book Day and Star Wars Day this last Saturday. It was a lot of fun. We had the local 501st chapter out at DJ's Collectibles. Geek News Now has been putting some of that stuff up on their platform from social media and all that. And so check it out. It's a lot of fun. I do a show on social media on YouTube called The Right Way. You can find me, just do a search for GKJ Publishing. On that show, we talk book recommendations, author interviews, and creative writing tips. We have a new episode coming out this Saturday, May 11th. Actually, this is the episode that John is going to be featured on as my top 10 book recommendations guest host. And then I have an interview with Dominic Nerd the Poet McDonald about his poetry, and then doing a writing tip on how to write acrostics.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It's gonna be all fun. Right. As for us right here, of course, if you want to get a hold of us, best way to do that is through our email is warthestars1@gmail.com. That is also our handle on X at warthestars1. All of those social media can be found under War of the Stars. Check us out on YouTube, War of the Stars 9510. Don't ask me why the 9510. That's just what they put on it.
I think you can change.
I'll have to look into that. Anyway, of course, we are a proud member of Geek News Now on YouTube and Spotify. If you're on YouTube, remember Geek News Now Official. If you want to find that, you can also check out all the other podcasts. Also, don't forget to check out my other show with my daughter, Star Wars Through the Eyes of a Child. We are going through the Clone Wars in chronological order, having a lot of fun doing that. If you want to support the show, Ko-fi.com/War of the Stars. You can get us just a little bit of a tip. Or you can buy our merch at spreadshirt.com/shop/War of the Stars. And you can buy the War of the Stars merch there. Did I forget anything?
Not that I can think of.
All right. Well, as always, remember, this is not just my Star Wars. This is not just your Star Wars. This is our Star Wars. Until next time, may the Force be with you.
Hello there.
General Kenobi.